You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, the Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN. I'm your host, Mark White, and with me today is Kyle Wegner. You might know him from Union Federation, where he discusses the Orville as well as New Trek, and also the Fandom Podcast Network, where there is a multitude of shows.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. I don't want to list all of the shows, but you could probably talk about the ones that that you're involved with.
Oh, it's great to be here. I feel like I've gone from the Cerritos to the Enterprise.
Sure.
No, it's great to be here. And when you asked me to be on for this particular episode, I'm really excited because this is one of my favorite things going on in New Trek right now.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, good to hear. No, I loved it too from the get-go.
I'm excited. I am very excited. And, you know, we've been doing our Fandom Podcast Network BQM partnership here, and it's been great. And, you know, you guys have been great to work with, and I'm always glad to be on one of your shows.
Yeah, same. It's awesome having you guys. Union Federation, one of those things that I have wanted to check out forever because I kept hearing how great it was. And now that it is on with BQN, I'm able to access it a little bit easier, and I listen episode after episode, and I just love your conversations. They're great, and you got some really talented people involved on your network, so I'm glad that we were able to, you know, borrow you guys here and there for some of your shows, which is great.
And you actually made your appearance on Union Federation. Hopefully we made it a nice welcome experience for you, but it's been a blast. We've been really talking up the Orville, obviously, the last couple of months as we've been getting through what hopefully isn't the final season of the Orville, but we're still waiting to see. Kind of a little bit of a break right now because we've got a couple of weeks before we get some new Star Trek out there, but I'm excited. We're not that far from Lower Decks Season 3.
Oh, thank goodness. It's going to be fantastic. I cannot wait.
Yeah, and I just got a shout out too. I have an amazing crew over there on the Union Federation with Kevin and Haley and our, of course, BQN's own Amy Nelson when she appears. And several people from BQN have made an appearance since we've joined up, and it's just been great having you guys. And, you know, they do all the heavy lifting. I'm just there for along for the ride and make sure they all sound good.
I can definitely relate to that. Well, now it's time for All Good World.
From Las Vegas to Boston, USA to Canada and South America, from the United Kingdom to South Africa, from Russia to Australia, the South Pacific and beyond, this is All Good World.
Each episode we highlight a different location around the globe where this podcast has reached. Today's episode, we'd love to give a special shout out to Costa Rica! Fun fact, Costa Rica was inhabited by indigenous peoples before coming under Spanish rule in the 16th century. It remained a peripheral colony of the empire until independence as part of the First Mexican Empire, followed by membership in the Federal Republic of Central America, from which it formally declared independence in 1847. Following the brief Costa Rican Civil War in 1948, it permanently abolished its army in 1949, becoming one of only a few sovereign nations without a standing army. Now, that was something that I found extremely interesting when looking up facts on Costa Rica, and it reminded me a little bit of, well, the Federation, because the Federation and Starfleet, they really help out a multitude of different worlds, and these worlds don't have necessarily their own army, but the people that live there, if they want to, will sign up and become part of Starfleet. So it's a little similar there.
Yeah, I have a cousin who actually had some property on Costa Rica. He'd go down there every summer for about a month and just live down there. He absolutely loved it. It's funny though, because between what you guys do here and what we have Haley Stoddard, who's our amazing science officer on Union Federation. I didn't need to have history and science in high school. I get it from my podcasting. No, it but that is very interesting that they have no standing army. I actually did not know that. So that's
kind of cool.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah, I have not yet been to Costa Rica, but that's definitely on a bucket list there. And
yeah, I hear it's a beautiful country.
Yeah, thinking about no like standing armies, isn't that? I mean, it's the same with Canada essentially, right? Because they use ours.
Canada, but Canada still has some military there. It's just they don't necessarily have a standing army like Costa Rica. But you know, when I think about it too, do we consider Starfleet a standing army? I wouldn't.
Well, they're a protective force, right?
They're a protective force, but they're meant to be explorers. So I think they're protective force, but I don't know if they I don't see Starfleet planning invasions with their
that's a good army is just there to protect its citizens and not necessarily invade or conquer.
So I find it very interesting. I'd be curious to know listeners' take to know would they classify Starfleet as an army or something else?
Yeah, at least an air force or a space force.
Let's
not use space force. yeah, good point. Well, so this week on All Good Things, we are going to be continuing with our First Contact series, which was started long before I jumped on, and we've just continued. And so the last one that we did, what was it? It must have been Discovery was the last one that we did. So we are jumping on now to cover Lower Decks.
Mark, I have a question. Technically, since we're doing Lower Decks, shouldn't this be a Second Contact episode?
Well, that's the title, which is great. So in this episode, which is called Second Contact, ensigns Mariner and Boimler run into difficulty on Galar. Meanwhile, an alien virus infects the crew of the Cerritos. And that was as brief a synopsis as I could give.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, it's only a 22-minute show. I am curious, Mark. Had you ever watched Rick and Morty before this came out?
Yes.
Okay, I was curious because I know when this came out, I was familiar with Rick and Morty. I'd watched some of it, but there was a lot of people I talked to who I had to try to talk into this, and they weren't sure about it. And I'm like, have you watched Rick and Morty? And a lot of them hadn't. So I was like, how do I explain what's going to happen here?
So what's interesting about this series is, that first season was kind of different. But it is for, any first series of Star Trek, but they were, especially in this first episode, really hanging on or clinging to that sort of Rick and Morty style. And I feel like after that, like midway through the season, they kind of went off and started, really finding their own sea legs, which was great. Because I don't think Rick and Morty style animation, which as great as it is, and I watch every episode and I love it, I don't think it really fits with Star Trek. The great thing is they found a balance at some point during middle of the season where they were a little less bombastic, and now there's like a good balance where it's still, a good comedy, an adult comedy, but it's not as snappy of like joke, reference, which they were doing at the beginning, and which I found rewatching this episode kind of off-putting because I'm used to the second half of this season and then going on to season two in particular, how good it got when they sort of slowed down on the references and slowed down on the jokes and just let it be a little bit more organic. I don't know, that was my take, but I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I know, I agree with a lot of what you say there. I think for me, when I go back and watch, I'm going to say it's probably about the first 3 to 4 episodes of the first season. What it feels like is they hadn't figured out their pacing yet, and they were trying to force as much as they could into each episode. So each episode just felt like, oh, we're trying to fit 2 hours worth of stuff into a 22-minute episode. And also, again, I think it was as they were working with people who were involved with Star Trek and really got these episodes refined and their process refined, it really picked up. And once they started clicking, they haven't really stopped. And it's been, in my opinion, one of the most fun things of Star Trek ever made. And really, outside of Strange New Worlds, might be my second favorite Star Trek show right now.
Well, it's definitely one of those ones like Strange New Worlds. And I bring this up on this podcast quite often. But we're going to talk for a second about the episodic nature of episodes. And I just love that. I love saying that. It's just fun. But yeah, you have a lot of modern Trek that is serialized. But here we're going back to the basics of episodes, where there is a little bit of connective tissue, a little bit of growth between the characters, but for the most part, at the end of the episode, you have a conclusion and it resets the next week and everybody, you know, continues and carries on. And sometimes you need that in life, because you don't always want to come home from work after a long day and put on something where you have to, like, okay, what happened in the previous one? Like, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's easier to jump into like a Lower Decks, somewhat a Prodigy, but definitely like Strange New Worlds. Like, I could come home, you know, from work and just put on any Strange New Worlds episode and be like, oh, okay, there's a thing happening here, and I witness it, and then we move on. It has a concrete beginning, middle, and end, and that's what I also love about Lower Decks. It's like, okay, you can just put it on and then be done with it and put on a random episode tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, that's been a conversation we've been having on Union Federation, especially with Strange New Worlds and how much we loved that. And that was one of our biggest things, was getting back to episodic television. I think what has happened was, I call it a little bit of streaming disease, where we had so many shows that were streaming shows that were being written for an overall season. And I think writers forgot how to write episodic television for a little while, or it just became not the thing to do. Everything had to be this overarching story. And it works for certain things. I have never really felt it's worked for Star Trek that well. I don't think it has worked that great for Discovery. No. I don't think it's worked as well as it should have, for as well as it could have for Picard. And I think that's what makes Star Trek so unique and so fun, is that, yeah, you might have a two-parter, or you might... One of the things I think writers are learning is the aspect of, okay, we can write episodic television, but have these little plot threads that run through entirely. Mm-hmm. But each episode doesn't have to be centered around that main plot thread. And I think Strange New Worlds hit it out of the park. And it's something I'm hoping maybe the Discovery writers saw for next season of episode... for season 5, is maybe we'll see a little bit more of episodic television mixed in there. But Lower Decks, and it, plus it helps that Lower Decks is animated, meant to be more of a comedy fun type thing. So yeah, you have some plot threads that run through as you do, especially as you develop the characters. But yeah, you don't have that weight of an overarching season wearing on you, like, oh, I have to, if I miss this week's episode or I don't get to it right away, I'm going to be spoiled on half of what's going to come the rest of the year. Instead, you just have that self-contained story and you can enjoy it for that and then be done with it till the next episode comes out.
Well, I want to touch on a couple of the points you made. And one of the things that you talked about was it being a comedy and lighthearted. And to me, that goes back to what I love about Strange New Worlds as well, is it is just this warm blanket of positivity that you would get from, like, especially like a TOS or a TNG, a little less so with Voyager and Deep Space Nine, but still it was there, more so than it is with a lot of modern Trek. But it's a return to that sort of that feeling that you got, you know. And then something else you mentioned, you were talking about, you know, how they feel forced into doing these long, for modern Trek, the long arcs. And it, to me, exactly, it feels shoehorned. And it's too bad too for like Discovery, that I think you should be able to criticize things that you love and still love them, right? And I feel that way about Discovery, which I love, and I'm so glad it's on the air. And they've, I mean, brought so much to the franchise, so much richness and beauty to the franchise. And I think the writers do understand Trek and really appreciate Trek. But with that said, they feel like they're having to have this big arc. And what are you going to do at the end of the arc? It has to have these big, you know, universe ending or universe saving things. And I'm so burnt out on it. Like, can't they just, I don't know, like, try to fight a disease for a season or save a planet? Or can it not just be the entire galaxy and all of the things, you know, and then the poor, you know, characters that we have on the show, like, I want to get to know, still we're going in what, season five? I want to know somewhat of the bridge crew, which I already know so many people on Strange New Worlds, and they've had one season, and we're still waiting in Discovery to, like, really get to know the rest of the cast.
Yeah. I feel your point completely. For me, they had a great opportunity with Discovery to make a switch when they went to the future. We could have just had episodic television of Discovery of them just learning about the different things in the future and learning the future. And instead, they decided to go with the whole burn thing, and then this season with the everything else that's going on. We had an opportunity to really be able to switch to an episodic format then, with and really get to know the bridge crew, because you talked about it, on Strange New Worlds, even the bridge crew members that maybe didn't get a focus episode on them this season, they got enough moments to show their personality and show where they fit in with the crew and where they stand. And that just hasn't happened for Discovery. It's been a small pocket of people that have gotten the focus. And I love the Discovery cast. I think since Next Generation, they are the most embracing of the Star Trek fandom cast that we've had. And I know how beloved they are at conventions and how great they are with the fans. And that's what even makes it a little more frustrating to me, because I like Discovery, but I just would like to see it go in a little bit of a different direction. So we're not, because it does. Discovery feels like it's a weight to watch it sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's so heavy, and it's like so like, oh, I gotta watch Discovery now. And it's not because I dislike Discovery, it's just like it feels like it's a mission in itself to watch
They've done well, I've noticed, is this is kind of ironic, their first couple episodes of each season have been the best, because they've kind of been these little episodes that set up the arc, right? And so they're not really in the arc, they're setting up the arc, and so there's, like, they're episodic. Like, you had, last season was season four. The first couple episodes were just, I was just like, wow, they're getting good. They're getting cooking. And then that kind of fell off. And I don't even really much remember what happened last season. Like, it was the same when they first went to the future. It was like setting up that future. Those first couple episodes were so cool.
Oh, yeah, those first about three episodes of season three were amazing episodes. And then it was just like, oh, now we're going to dive more into the burn thing. And it's just like, happened? But, yeah, no, and that's where my frustration comes with Discovery. But I want to flip that to get back Strange New Worlds, because I look at even this episode, we got most of our main characters developed within this first episode to where at least we had an idea of where they were coming. Yeah, Lower Decks, yeah.
Speaking of, let's jump into talking about how each character was introduced and what our thoughts were on that. So we get the voiceover. Now it shows the bridge crew, but then immediately the focus comes off the bridge crew and you're like, okay, this is a different show because it's not about the bridge crew. And you have Boimler's voice sort of setting up the thing. He's got the captain's log and he's kind of doing that in the closet. So immediately we know a couple of things. We know that he is on track for being a captain. He really is interested in that, so much so that he's role-playing it. And then we realize that he's just kind of like a lower decks person. He's doing it in the closet because he's a little bit afraid of what people would think about him doing that. I don't know. What are your thoughts of Boimler's introduction, how that was done?
You get Boimler's personality right out of the gate. This is a guy who, he's all about the regulation. He wants to be a captain. He wants to be on the bridge crew. We we get that wonderful introduction to him. And then we get the introduction also to Mariner. And it's a great, amazing way to set up the dynamic right out of the gate with those two characters.
Mariner was transporting like contraband. She had that, a big box of random contraband, and she was drunk. And I would say, out of all of the introductions, I don't think that her introduction was done very well, only because we don't learn much about her except for the fact that she's extremely irreverent, unprofessional, she's drunk. I guess she knows a lot of like Starfleet history because of all the references she's dropping like every second. But It took me until the end of the season to even tolerate her because of how just super annoying she was like this season. I don't know, but that's me. What are your thoughts on Mariner?
It took me a little while to grow on Mariner too. I think this was done. I think the way they handled her introduction was done intentionally, because I really think they what they wanted to do was have this be a character that maybe was going to annoy people until she grew on you and we could see her mature some. But I mean, it's interesting to when I rewatch the episode to look at this introduction now compared to seeing it for the first time fresh, because knowing now what Mariner, how Mariner develops, and you see this introduction, you're like, oh yeah, this is classic Mariner right here at her basic worst. You know, she's drinking the Romulan whiskey, which is blue, not green, which you'd expect it to be green. She's got the Batleth and swing it around and hits Boimler in the leg with the main artery. But yeah, it's I think it's meant to almost make this introduction meant to make Mariner seem annoying and frustrating, because she's so against anything we're used to in Star Trek. This is somebody who basically goes against everything we've known to be Starfleet. And it's like, okay, so what's the point of this character? We understand it's Lower Decks. And then when we find out the revelation of who she is later in this first episode, and as we, like I said, see her grow in the show, I really think it's interesting how far her character and Boimler's characters have come, and how they've actually complemented each other from the start here to where we're at now at the end of going into season three.
Yeah, I think the idea behind them is that they're going to learn from each other and grow and become better Starfleet officers and better characters to watch on screen. Then we're introduced to Tendi, who's arriving through the shuttle bay and given the tour. Well, I think she represents us as the viewers, because she is the character that we're seeing the ship through for the first time, just like her. So I think in this way, they're setting Tendi up to sort of, we're seeing things from her perspective. And that was cool. We needed that character. That way, you know, if you haven't even seen Star Trek for the first time, you would have an idea of what things are through Tendi's journey through this first episode. And that needed to happen in some way. So I think she was a good character to include as far as that's concerned.
No, I agree with you. I think she, for at least this episode, is very much our point of view character. And, you know, her sense of what, you always have that character who's new and they got the sense of wonderment and that youthful enthusiasm. And I think especially seeing her sense of wonderment, even when she walks in and sees the big sign for the Cerritos and her amazement of it, even though, you know, most of the crew's like, oh, we're on the Cerritos.
Yeah.
But it's that sense of wonderment and that sense of energy of being new and being there to start her journey into Starfleet. And again, I think at least for this episode, and I think the first few afterwards, she's kind of like the character that's designed for the viewer to identify with. You know, you've got Boimler and his idiosyncrasies. You've got Mariner, who's just in your face. And I think Tendi is designed to be, okay, this is the character we would probably be, because we would be in this sense of amazement and just general sense of excitement to be involved in something so amazing.
Absolutely. Now on the tour, they go through evidently the Lower Decks quarters, and this is the first time we've seen the Lower Decks quarters done in this way, because we're used to Galaxy class ships and the Lower Decks people, they bunk up, but they're in rooms. This time they're in a hallway, and I don't think I got it really until this viewing of like, well, it's just a different class ship, so this is how they do it there. But I always found that weird. They just kind of threw him in a hallway altogether. And like, there's that guy walking by in like just a towel and stuff. And I'm like, there's literally no privacy here. That's really odd. Well, in the even Lower Decks on Strange New Worlds, you saw Uhura. She's bunked up with like, what, two other guys in her room. So yeah, how do you feel about that?
You know, I actually think it was probably they did this to over exaggerate it, just how, you know, the Lower Decks and how completely forgot about they are. And I wish they could get this musky smell out of the podcasting area. I can't. It's a sonic shower. It still has that musky smell. But no, I think it's one of those things to where, again, it's the aspect of who we're dealing with Mike McMahon and over exaggerating some. But it also makes sense, especially with it not being a Galaxy class ship per se. They probably don't have room for every crew member to have their own room or even to bunk up. And so here they are in a hallway. And I think this is an aspect of trying to establish just how to set up almost like a class mm-hmm. differential between the bridge crew and even a level of crew down there to you're in the lower decks. You're at the bottom. I mean, even when Tendi Fritz gets on the ship, just keep on moving, lower decker. You know, they even kind of make that differentiation right there. And I think this is just in Mike McMahon's own style, over exaggerating what it means to be on lower decks. You have nothing. You have no privacy. You have nothing, but you're just supposed to accept it because you're on the grand Starfleet mission now.
So Tendi is essentially Jack Dawson in Titanic, and he's in awe and wonder, but he also has to go to steerage, and he's in there with like four other people in essentially like a hallway.
Basically, yeah, and you know, some might say the Cerritos might be destined to be a Titanic.
Well, you know, you get through the end of season two, and the ship is looking a little ragged, but
yeah, just it's a little still flying. Bit. it's a tough little ship.
Well, then we get introduced to Rutherford. And Rutherford is, I just have in my notes, doing engineering stuff. It's not really, I don't think, explained particularly what he's doing, but he's got his little toolkit there, and he's working next to the Jeffries tube on something. And they say that he had recently gotten cybernetic sort of implants, so he must have suffered an injury doing something. His character, I've never quite understood. I don't get why he can't hold certain amount of memories. He only has like limited storage capacity for memories or whatnot, and I don't know. And it's weird, like if he hits the thing wrong, he can totally turn into a whole other character. I think it's great, I guess, from a cartoon standpoint, to have a character like that can go on the fritz and whatnot, kind of like a Data, but and also like a crossbreed with Arium, because Arium couldn't hold that many memories either. But, yeah, I don't know. At this stage, with technology being what it was, you know, post-TNG, I just feel like they could have done better.
I can see that. And I think they actually have addressed some of the issues with Rutherford in the second season. I know they had a couple storylines about his cybernetic implants and the reasons why some things might be the way they are. And I think there's still more to that mm-hmm. story. At least with his introduction in this episode, he felt like he was kind of maybe being designed at that point to be like the centering character. The character that, you know, yes, he has a few little quirks, but he is the one that kind of keeps things down to earth a little bit in the aspect of how his attitude is. And then we kind of see him, at least that's how he comes across initially. Then we kind of see at the end of the episode where, yeah, he's a little too obsessed with engineering. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think what Rutherford represents, I do believe he is probably the least extreme of our four main characters. He's probably the most logical, shall we say, of them, because you've got Boimler, who's just so regulation and so by the book. You've got Mariner, who's all over the place. You've got Tendi, who's just that youthful exuberance. And here you have Rutherford, who's obviously been with Starfleet for a little bit, but still young, but because of the implant and his human side, there's a little bit more of a level or baseline there, except for when his implant decides to act up. And it looks like they're trying to establish a little bit of story there. So I'm curious to see if they're going to play up with more of that in season three.
Yeah, I definitely want to see him get more developed. I know, spoiler warning, if you haven't watched season two, which at this point I hope you have. But they're setting up, it looks like, some sort of a Manchurian candidate kind of thing with him and how it was, you know, the implant was programmed, and maybe is he Section 31 or whatnot. But that'll be interesting to see where they go with that.
Yeah, I agree. It's good, and that's one of the things I am looking forward to season three, to see how much they play up with that, if any. But I think Rutherford is definitely kind of one of the more interesting mystery slow burn characters we've got in Trek right now, actually.
Well, as far as setting up the show and getting a good idea of what this show would become, because essentially this is the pilot. Well, how do you feel that the Lower Decks did setting up this first pilot episode?
I think it really did give us a good introduction right out of the gate to our four main characters, and that we got a little bit of a taste of each of them. I think the issue being with Lower Decks, and I think this is an issue with a lot of television these days, is you can't completely judge a show by its first episode, because I think they're trying to establish so much now because they have these shorter seasons. Most of them don't have old TNG or old other shows from the late 80s and the early 90s where, oh, wow, we're running 22, 24 episodes a season. They get like 8 to 10 at most. So they've got to really get their characters established, and I don't think they figured out quite the writing styles yet. And I really truly believe most every show I've watched, I would say within the last 10 years, doesn't find itself till episode 3 or 4, and I think Lower Decks is a perfect example of that. I think by episode 4, you can start seeing where it's finding its groove, and especially here when we're coming off of a mix where I think they're trying to keep it at a hyperkinetic pace to bring in your Rick and Morty fans who maybe not be Star Trek fans, but they want to watch this, but still have something for your Star Trek fans. And I think that was the biggest problem Lower Decks had early on, was finding that balance, which I think they've done a very good job of. But here, I think it introduces the characters well, but it feels like it's trying to appease both sides of the audience it wants to appeal to, and it's not quite there yet. And luckily, from what most people I've talked to, they either stuck with it or were talked into going back to it after the first episode to give it another shot because they were hearing so many good things about it. And they've really caught up on it since, and everybody seems to be on board with it. And even the few people who I've talked to that have been asking me about it more even recently, I said, you need to give yourself the first 4 episodes. That's 2 hours. You're basically investing 2 hours. If you're not sold after about the first four to five episodes, then it's not for you. But I guarantee you, most likely you will be hooked in by that point.
Well, I watched the episode twice in the last 24 hours. And what's funny is what I remember about this episode is the setting up and the character moments. And the what would typically be the A plot of the ship getting infected with this virus and everybody turning into zombies and whatever, that whole part doesn't even really register. It's kind of like a phase out of like, I don't know, there was something there, and then there was something on the planet with like Mariner and Boimler had to take their clothes off, and Boimler got, you know, devoured by this bug creature and suckled on. I don't know. But that whole part, the action adventure part, I've watched it twice, and I don't really get much of the logic, but how, you know, these plot lines were set up. But what I do get is the character, you know, introductions. Like, I remember, that's what sticks with me about this episode.
I think it's a great point you make, Mark, because I was very much the same way. I remember the character moments and the introduction of the characters. That's the part that stands out, because I think that's what they were going with. And trying to establish just where the Lower Decks really fall in the ranking, because the two things I remembered even before I rewatched this episode was obviously the introductions of the characters, and then the revelation at the end when we find out Mariner is the captain's daughter. That's right. And then also just the aspect of, here you have Boimler, and then he sees what Mariner is talking throughout the episode. Oh, the higher ups, the bridge, the officers, they don't care about us. They don't even know us. And Boimler's like, no, that's not true. And he's got such hero worship for them. And then at the end of the episode, when how the captain treats him and doesn't even remember his name properly, and he doesn't, you know, he basically brings the slime that saves everybody, and he doesn't get any credit for it at all. It's not even recognized for it. And how he kind of changes. And so the episode accomplished what it mainly needed to accomplish, was introducing the characters and introducing kind of what is the main plot thread here of what Lower Decks is about. But yeah, I agree with you that you don't really remember the virus. You don't remember the spider using Boimler to suck on and some of the other little comedy tidbits. But I think that's also in a way a compliment, because it shows you how much they put in the value of developing the characters and making sure the characters were established in this episode. And I think sometimes you don't get that with some of the more modern television shows, that you don't really get to know a character until like 3 or 4 episodes in. And here I felt like we at least had a pretty good idea of the baseline of our characters out of the first episode. Yeah.
Not to poo-poo Discovery, which I do love and will continue to watch, but they didn't have that luxury, because their first couple of episodes, they weren't even on the Discovery. And it was a whole different crew, and we got to know some people, and then they didn't even come through to be on Discovery. And we only saw them in like flashbacks and Mirror Universe episodes. So,
if I'm going to be honest, though, when you talk about that with Discovery, I feel like truthfully on Discovery, there's only maybe 3 or 4 characters we truly have a good idea about on Discovery. Everybody else, we might have some idea. We either have some idea, but we don't have a full picture, or we just we're playing a guessing game half the time.
Well, what were your favorite moments with this premiere episode?
There's a few. You have it in the notes here. I love the opening credits for this show. The opening credits for this show are so fun. You see the Cerritos trying to do this, all the majestic Star Trek opening stuff, and you know it hits an iceberg and it's ice meteor is falling. It shows up at the Borg battle and gets shot at once and turns around and retreats. It's so much fun there. But you know the other moments I like, I actually really do like, especially down on the planet, the moments between Boimler and Mariner, because you see where Mariner talks about her experience level compared to Boimler and everything she's been through. And it really, I think, establishes a connection between those two characters. And I think that was, you know, like when Boimler is trying to call her out and then he realizes you're selling weapons and it's actually farming equipment. So Boimler's kind of realizing maybe she's not quite what he had in mind there. I actually really like at the end of the episode too, where you have Rutherford and Tendi talking and Tendi's asking about his date. Oh, it went so well. But then this whole engineering thing happened and Tendi's like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I just love how they found the way to do these connections with these characters in this episode with those little moments there. And I think that's what, again, I come back to it. That's what stands out to me about this episode, especially again, you have a different perspective of it when you go back and rewatch it and you really see them establishing those foundations in this first episode.
What I like about the opening credit sequence, again, I think you hit the nail on the head. The funny moments in there to set up, it's a comedy, but it's like callbacky a little bit to the opening credits of, you know, like TNG or Voyager or even Deep Space Nine. Then you have, you know, throughout the show, these callbacks in subtle ways to 90s Trek, like going to the transporter sounds, right? And so hearing those, the TNG transporter sounds, and it's in blue like it was for TNG. And then you have Douglas Station, which looks like all of the space stations that they showed in TNG, because they had that one station that they had built for one of the movies and they just kept reusing it. But they used that. And I just loved it. Like the subtle callbacks, which they got more of a hand on in season two, were things that I really enjoyed about it. It gave me all the warm feels.
Let's be honest, Mark. Really, the best part of the episode was the warp core, because everybody loves the warp core.
When they just went from the tropical paradise to the warp core, it's just like thump, thump, thump. That in itself was funny, but I loved like that sound, because yes, that is something we would have heard on TNG or Voyager when we were in engineering. We all know that sound when they're in engineering. You hear it in the background, the dump, 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 and that's great.
I think Boimler probably pops that in through his earphones at night to help him sleep.
Yeah, it's great. It's great white noise.
We need to pre-program Alexa.
Oh, do you listen to white noise at all?
I'll either use white noise or I'll use like thunderstorm sounds.
Well, that's white noise, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, no, nothing like a good night's sleep to the power of the warp core.
Womp, womp, womp. Well, let's jump into some trivia. There's some interesting factoids about this week's episode. The stardate 574362 places this episode about 2.5 years after Voyager's return to the Alpha Quadrant in Star Trek Voyager Endgame.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's one of the things that I found interesting. I don't know. I haven't decided if I completely like it or not, but how much they really are starting to establish the timeline in Star Trek a little bit more, and how close some of these things are together. And I'm finding it interesting, but I also can see where they've been more than once because of this. They've written themselves into a little bit of a corner at times.
A lot of different uniforms.
Yes, many different uniforms.
Think about it right now between Voyager returning and Star Trek Picard. How they've already shown us that they've had at least, what, like four different uniforms in that span of time within, what, like a decade or two? Couple of decades, but yeah.
Just be like seven, wear whatever you feel like.
Cat suits. Lots of cat suits.
There we go. The release of this episode marks the first time two Star Trek series have launched within a single calendar year, as Star Trek Picard debuted with the episode Remembrance in January 2020. You know, what I find so funny about this is I reminisce back to when Deep Space Nine and Voyager were going on at the same time, and we even that like little bit of crunch we had with Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and mm-hmm. Voyager, and it's like everybody's going, oh my god, there's so much Trek, and now it's like, oh, there's another Trek every weekend anymore. It's been one of the more fascinating things to watch as far as how it's happened with Paramount Plus and what they're doing here. Unless you're a podcaster, then it's really stressful and adds a lot of work. Yeah. God, don't we get a vacation from Star Trek? No, but it's amazing, and it's a showing of the times that we have so much of the properties we love out like this now, where every week, or at least, you know, we have very short gaps between when one of them ends and then the other one begins.
Well, yeah, they had you know, in the 90s, you know, they would have max 24 weeks or so of episodes, and that would be it. And now you're getting, you know, almost a full calendar year, but they are different. So you're getting 10 weeks of this style and then another 10 weeks of that style and 10 weeks of this style. So at least it's not the same thing over and over again.
That is true, but it does make for a fun time. I have a question about the next piece of trivia you have, though. You mind if I read?
Please.
Put it out there. The episode featured the first use of a censored profanity in the Star Trek franchise. Specifically, Dr. Tiana is bleeped when she discovers that the slime covering Ensign Brad Boimler can be used to treat the rage virus. So I have a question mm-hmm. for you. More significant, the bleep or when Tilly drops the really first true F-bomb on Discovery?
What do I think is better? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, what do you think is more significant? What do you think is more shocking for a Star Trek show?
Oh, Chili, for sure. And the F-bomb. Yeah. It was the F-bomb, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an F-bomb. And I was like, wait, did she just say what I think she said? But I honestly, with the chaos in the Lower Decks episode, I really didn't even notice the bleep.
I think they could do more than that with Star Trek Discovery. I like it. It's organic. I love cursing. You know, there are some cultures that just use profanity almost like poetry, and they have so many different words for things. And I just don't think that, you know, especially like you're paying for premium cable. Like in the 90s, they had to because they were on just like network TV, but now you don't have to. They can, like, cussing and profanity is going to be around as long as there'll be humanity. As long as people will be talking, there'll be words that are just you use for special occasions. And I like that they brought it into Trek. I'm not offended. I'm very much not a prude about those things. But with that said, I think that they could go further, not language, but like with sexuality. Like there was that whole episode where Captain Georgiou went down to the Klingon homeworld and she went to that brothel.
Oh, yes.
And she had a three-way,
yes.
But they're all still kind of in their underwear. And, I mean, not that I need to see Georgiou's boobs, but, you know, you could have. And you could have showed the other people maybe a little bit more skin than they did. I think the guy, you might have seen his butt. I don't know, his green butt, but I don't know. I'm not 100% on that. But, I mean, it is premium TV.
The minute you put something behind a paywall, to me, it's open season.
Yeah.
You know, if you put something behind a paywall, and then if you're a parent or whatever and realize, hey, this is behind a paywall, so I need to be a little bit more about what's going on or whatever. But, yeah, once you're on that paywall, it's open season. Anything should be fair
game. Yeah, you put the warnings at the front, you know, sexually explicit content, whatever, blah, 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 and people know not to check out that episode or what have you. But, you know, obviously that wouldn't work with Lower Decks or Prodigy, you know, or even Strange New Worlds, which is definitely the most positive and upbeat. I think that's the best for, like, families. You might not want to do it there. But if you're going to, like, the darker Trek, which would be Star Trek Discovery, is, like, the darkest of the dark, Why not?
Now, wait a minute. Let's talk about Lower Decks here, because we did have the Olympic training naked holograph suite in this episode. And she tells Tenny to stand back.
True. But they've shown on Lower Decks, when people have been naked, they've put the black bars over the body parts. Yeah. So they have censored it out. This episode, they showed the bottoms. That was about it.
But I'm just saying, they're definitely a little bit more willing to push the envelope.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because, it is sort of like a teenage comedy, like Rick and Morty would teen.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely aiming, just like Rick and Morty. If they really probably wanted to go full out, they could go full out. And they could go full South Park or something like that, and without much of a problem.
Oh, absolutely. They do have a lot more liberty. As far as that's concerned, we haven't brought this up on the show, but I want to know, because it came out actually after, but Mike McMahon's involved. Talk about, for just a brief second, not too long, we won't linger, but Solar Opposites and how you feel Solar Opposites does compared to Lower Decks.
I'm just not sure, because one, I haven't been able to really get into the Solar Opposites thing. Because of just time. Yeah. There's so much right now. But, with Mike McMahon, the way I feel about it, Mike McMahon is he's a creative genius. Whether you like his style or not, he's always doing something. And whether you like it or not, he keeps you on your toes. I think he was a very intelligent writer The best example I can give him, he reminds me of Seth MacFarlane in this aspect. When Seth MacFarlane first came out, everything was, he was writing to appeal to what the studios wanted and what made them money. And then once he got enough juice, then he kind of started doing more advanced stuff with the Orville and things like that. And I think you're kind of seeing that a little bit with Mike McMahon as Rick and Morty. If you watch later seasons of Rick and Morty and you see what's happening with Lower Decks, he's really getting more of a message in there. And it's not just the potty humor or that mind-numbing humor. What I'm very curious about is the fact that we are going to have a crossover with Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks. How do you think they're going to pull that off? I'm curious.
Yeah, because they said that it's going to be a part of a Strange New Worlds episode and not a Lower Decks episode. So we're not going to see it coming through in the next month or so. It's going to be something we're going to wait till next spring for. And my thought is it'll probably start out as though it was a Lower Decks episode where they'll have the opening credits and stuff, maybe a little tease at the beginning that'll be Strange New Worlds, but then it will launch into there'll be a cut and it will be, you're on the Cerritos and it shows them playing around with the holodeck for a reason. Maybe that'll be the cold open kind of thing. And then there's some sort of, the discussion about Pike or whatever. And then, I don't know, maybe there's a transporter accident, because that seems to happen with temporal anomalies. Maybe they're going through a dust cloud in space and it sends them back in time. I don't know. They'll explain it some way like that.
One of the things about Solar Opposites too, and I haven't really got a chance to watch it that much, but I know from other things I've read, I think one of the other aspects of it is that because he's dealing with Star Trek, and it McMahon kind of has a reverence for it too, so he's going to push the envelope, but I think there's things he would do and has done in Solar Opposites that he would not necessarily do with Star Trek.
Yes, agreed. But I think that at the beginning of, and I brought this up a couple of times already, at the beginning of Lower Decks, we're introduced to everybody, and it is this sort of trying to be Rick and Morty, bombastic, blah, blah, blah comedy that I don't feel like works really well for Star Trek. And until they mellow out a little bit in towards the middle of the season, the end of the season, and then season two, where they find a good balance. With Solar Opposites, they just keep going with it, and it's sci-fi, like Rick and Morty is sci-fi, but it works there because it's not trying to be Star Trek. It's not trying to be the Federation. It's not trying to, show these established I guess, things that we know within that universe. It's its own universe, so they're allowed to do their own thing. And so I don't find it off-putting with that show. And to me, actually, like, I love Rick and Morty, but I don't know. Solar Opposites, to me, is just as good, if not better in some ways. They have that whole subplot that goes through season one and two where they have the wall and the alien children have shrunk people that annoy them and put them in essentially a terrarium. And there's this whole, they have a whole episode where it's just like a mini movie about what takes place in the wall. And to me, that's sometimes more interesting than what's going on with the Solar Opposites crew, you know. So that's the kind of a cool thing that he brought in there. And I've just really enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's something that I'm going to, especially after having this conversation, I'm going to go back and try to check out a little bit more so I can get a better feel for it. But I would love to spend a day in Mike McMahon's head, because I think it's would be a very interesting place to live for a day, because he sees... there are times I just wonder if when you look through his eyes, he sees everything in the animation style of Rick and Morty or Lower Decks. You know, that's how he sees the world, because he is so creative, and his mind must just go at 3,000 miles an hour.
I think being inside of his mind would be like, there'd be pink cotton candy clouds and chocolate fountains, and then a bunch of nudity and inappropriateness. And so it would be this interesting sort of a hybrid in his brain, because that's what he puts out. It's like he puts out these things that look very cute and quaint, but then there's like this whole other very adult side to it. And I think he would be a great person to talk to. We should try to get him on this show, because he'd be a very fun person to talk to. I think I would really get along well with Mike McMahon.
Yeah. So basically what we're thinking is an R-rated version of Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Oh, 100%. And Mike McMahon would be Willy Wonka.
I'd pay for that movie.
I think you and I just thought of the most brilliant marketing campaign for a film, really. Getting Mike McMahon to do it.
We definitely,
yeah.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to get him on the show and I'll come back and so we can pitch this idea to him.
So he can do his own Willy Wonka, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Rick is Willy Wonka in the film.
I'll tell you one thing, it would turn out a lot better than Tim Burton's version.
I try to forget that exists. Thank you.
Same. Well, maybe we should launch into final thoughts.
I've got my seatbelt on. Hit the warp drive. Hit that warp core.
So final thoughts for this episode. I think that they have a lot of ideas, and they try to address everything in this episode. I'm not sure it's a great episode on its own. But I feel like one thing that it does do well is setting up the characters, because that's the one thing that we remember. But I also, as far as first episodes are concerned, it's not the worst. Not the best, but it's not the worst.
No.
And it's definitely a show worth checking out. And I think you get that with this episode, that maybe you might not love the way that this first episode came across, but there was enough meat there and enough interest, especially with the character development, where you're like, I want to keep going. So that it did really well. So anyway, that's what I'll say about it.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you have to say there. I think it does a great job of introducing the characters and giving us the baseline of the characters. I think it's got, like I said, have said in this podcast a couple of times, it's got the same problem a lot of things right now have, where it's not enough on its own to just hook somebody completely in. You need to give, it's enough to go, okay, I'm intrigued. Maybe I'll give this, I need to give this another episode. But I think this is something, for the most part, most shows have this problem anymore. They can't seem to hook people in just off their first episode. And especially when you're talking about a 22-minute episode here. Even like, I'll use Strange New World as an example. Strange New World was able to get people hooked in so quickly because they had the setup of Pike on Discovery, and people already fell in love with Pike, so they had a setup. With this, you had nothing. You came in, and because of your amalgamizing Rick and Morty style with Star Trek, people had no idea what to expect. And it kind of, I think, again, this is a show that really worked more word of mouth, but I think the first episode is one of those things where I think there's enough there to hook somebody in to at least give it a couple more episodes. But it's one of those episodes I think changes greatly as we've, and how you perceive it after rewatching it, having been through the ride of everything we've had for Lower Decks now. So I think it's interesting to get people's perspective who are seeing it for the first time and people who have gone and revisited it since, because I really do think you get two different, totally different perspectives on it. I compare it very much to going back and watching Deep Space Nine season one, because once you completely watch Deep Space Nine, a lot of people said season one was kind of, it was a little dull. And then you go back and you see a lot of the connective tissue that they were setting up early in Deep Space Nine season one. This first episode of Lower Decks really feels kind of that same way. There's a lot of early connective tissue they set up here. And then you're like, oh, okay. And now you see like the path they've taken and everything like that. So I think it's definitely, it's a good opening episode, not great, but I think it's improved on by the fact if you stuck with the show and watched it the whole way through. Yeah. Next week's episode, Genetic Engineering Series Part 2, ENT Damage. What do you got going on with that?
So, yeah. So we are going to be going back to Enterprise, and we're going to be checking out the episode called Damage. Some of these episodes, like, I put in our watch list, and I don't necessarily remember what it's about, so I can't really give a synopsis right now, but we will find out what it's about. But evidently there's genetic engineering in there somewhere. Oh, I think it has, we meet the Ilorians in there, which isn't Una Chin Riley from, yeah, she's an Ilorian. So they're in this episode. And I think it's the first time we've seen them on screen, because before that, they were just mentioned in the books, correct?
Yeah, I believe so. I got to be honest with you, Enterprise is something I really need to revisit. I haven't watched it since its initial airing, and there's a lot of Enterprise that's a little fuzzy for me at this point.
I guarantee you, if you give it a rewatch, you will find that you really enjoy it. Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Scott Bakula fan, and I'm actually very curious about the upcoming Quantum Leap reboot that they're going to be doing, too. You're on NBC, not in a few weeks, I think, it premieres. But yeah, I'm a big Scott Bakula fan, so I'm looking forward to getting the time when I'm not editing and podcasting to actually get a chance to revisit Enterprise, because I have a few people in my life who said, yeah, you need to go back and rewatch it, because you're going to have a whole new appreciation for
that,
it.
That we started a whole series here on All Good Things called the Shuttlecraft series, based off a while back me rewatching Shuttlepod 1, which is, to this day, one of the best, in my opinion, Star Trek episodes. And it really just has two people in it through most of the episode. And it's just like character dialogue and development with the two people in this, you know, shuttle pod that is essentially lost in space and running out of power, and they have to turn off certain systems. And but there's enough there between the two characters that makes it, I mean, it's still sci-fi and whatnot, but it's really that the meat of the character development that's done in that episode that I just really love. And it is so different. Yeah.
Yeah. And that it's one of those things to where when you have two actors, especially in their characters, the actors and the characters have a chemistry to them, you can pull off something like that. And it can be sometimes the most simple, but most outstanding episode of television.
Absolutely. So if you're going to do a rewatch, start from the beginning, obviously, but remember to check out that episode in particular, Shuttlepod 1. It's really good.
Absolutely. I just know it's going to be a long road getting from there to here. So.
Well, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to join our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at All Good Pod. We would love for you to reach out. We love the interaction. Please follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. So, Kyle, where can people find you when you are not getting suckled on by a giant spider?
Oh, and that happens way more than I would care to admit. So it's, of course, you can find me all over the Fandom Podcast Network. You can visit our YouTube page, Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube, where we put videos up of all of our great shows. But our master feed is also on fpnet.podbean.com. We are on all the major podcast catchers. For those of you that have been kind of introduced to us with our new relationship with BQN, we cover all different kinds of fandoms, whether it's Star Trek, whether it's Star Wars, Highlander, what's going on with pop culture. We cover the MCU. We have a great couple of great shows that kind of deal with retro films and television in Couch Potato Theater and Time Warp. we have our master feed. Like I said, just search for Fandom Podcast Network. You can find it on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, or any of the major podcast catchers out there. We have a lot of fun. We had a few guys from the EQN on. We're hoping we're going to steal a few more into some of our other programming here soon. But and then personally, you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. So, but it's fun. And it's been a blast, and I'm really loving working with you guys too at the BQN. You guys have not fully assimilated us, which we appreciate because we do like some of our own little independent thought too, but the collective is a fun place to hang out. Where can people find all this BQN stuff besides, I know you guys share a few episodes on our Galaxy Class and this particular podcast pop up on our feed too, but you guys are all over the place too. Every time I look, you've assimilated some new podcasting.
And we definitely have some stuff coming up as well. There's we've got some new shows in the works right now. I know Christos on this podcast has mentioned that he's going to be having What's the Tea Bev that's coming up. It's going to be a Trek news oriented show. And we also have another show in the works too, but because the host has not done a lot of publicity yet, I want to kind of keep that under wraps, but that should be coming out in the next month or two as well. So we'll have a couple new shows we're dropping.
It's a Section 31 show, isn't it?
Well, maybe low key it is, but I can't really talk about it. I have a phaser to my head, so there's that.
I am not one to mess with somebody when they have a phaser to their head. Mark, where can people find you on social media?
Well, they can find me at the BQN Collective Facebook page. They can find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. If they become a patron of the network on Patreon, they can check out my show, It's Green. I promise there are new episodes coming. It's just been a very busy summer. So please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
Real quick, I do have to apologize to Mark. I've been spoiled by StreamYard and cues, so I missed a few cues in this podcast. So I'm my wonderful host who had me on as a guest, an apology for some of the extra editing work that I've caused him in this episode. But two, we would like to thank our executive producer who make this all possible. They are Mark White, Amy Nelson, Tony Robinson, and Ken Tripp. We'd also like to thank our associate producer. I cannot remember.
It's so Mahendran Radhakrishnan.
I just wanted to be respectful to the name. I did not want to butcher it. So, and Tim Cooper, a special thanks to Tony Robinson for our artwork and Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music. I would just like to say thank you too for having me on this wonderful podcast. Always a blast to podcast with all you guys from the BQN. Mark, we hope you make a return trip to Union Federation very
soon. This was a treat for me to have you on. I was very blessed that you let me on Union Federation for the episode I really wanted to talk about, which was the Elysian Kingdom. We have yet to talk about it on this show, so I'm looking forward to the day when we get to cover that episode on here. I loved that episode.
You're the host. Just make it happen. Yeah, you're the host. Just make it happen.
It will happen. I want it to happen in an organic way. If you'd like to help keep all of our shows coming to each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Join the Hive to enjoy It's Green, Amos Math Moments, and other network perks with a monthly subscription of $5 or more. You can join our meetings on The Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things.
Previously on BQN. All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast.
Did you know G goes nowhere, does nothing, GNDN? They put that on Enterprise D doors, that abbreviation, it means, goes nowhere, does nothing.
They should have put that on this episode.
Right? Oh, dear.
Infinite Diversity, a Star Trek Universe podcast.
I thought, saw someone on Twitter say that Pike's approach to this is the same as Edith Keeler's approach to world politics in the 30s, that it's the right idea but the wrong time for it because it won't work, because you cannot, there are some people that you cannot get peace with. Right. Some fights are inevitable, and this was one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, you can be right, but it's not always the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Galaxy Class, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast.
Well, I just think it's feminine, but still warrior, still, you know, all the armor, but there's something flowy about it. It's just the perfect mix, you know, that fierce and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
You will find these and more of your favorite podcasts on BQN.